Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Come to Air Temple Island, your new home.
I'm the Avatar. You gotta chill with it.
You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot.
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
Go away, Mako.
Don't worry. I will protect you, my feeble turtle duck.
I will make no such promises.
Bolin's got some moves, huh?
You amuse me. I will make you mine.
You shall meet again soon, beautiful woman.
I can't wait to get started. Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar, The Last Airbender, and Legend of Korra podcast for DongWuFang.net. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Sam.
Hello.
Delaney.
YOLA.
And Britt.
Hello.
Yes, that's Britt. This is a continuation of last week's podcast, which was on lists of Korra things. This week you will hear, probably, assuming, depending on where I cut it off, our episode ranks and lists including female interactions, accessories, and worst characters, and I think visuals in this one too. So yeah, check it out, and here is our continuation from last week. Let's do episodes now. Honorable mentions, these are best episodes from both seasons. My honorable mentions are the book one finale, which I think, despite awfully wrapping up some plot lines, is still good, especially the Skeletons in the Clouds of flashback. And also Out of the Past, which I remember enjoying. But it's been a while since I've seen book one. I had a pretty hard time ranking book one episodes in here. They all kind of blend together, and none of them really stand out as best to me. Sam, any honorable mentions?
No.
Delaney?
I have A New Spiritual Age and Turning the Tides.
Okay.
So Dylan managed to convince me to put it on my
Not good enough. Okay. Britt?
None.
Okay. Number five, I have The Sting.
We only had to do five. I did 10.
Okay. Dylan, mine's on five too. That's my five.
It clearly said five. Okay, well, you just do your top five then.
Poor Britt.
You made my life so much harder.
I did not. You did that to yourself. The Sting is just a really good self-contained episode, as opposed, yes. And it's especially good coming out of some pretty bad episodes before it. Highlights include the chase fight scene on the waterboats, and then
it's
like how I say water ice and nobody knows what I'm talking about.
Yeah, exactly. It's like ski boats. I don't know what they are, and other stuff. I don't remember what else happened in the episode, but it's a good episode. Delaney, what do you have to say about this thing?
Well, as I said, when we talked about this, the mystery factor. I enjoy detective things. And I actually like Mako a little bit when he's being a detective, because I can't help but to not like detective-y things. And as you said, the four episodes before are horrible. Why? And then we get this episode, it's like, hey, this is good. So I think we might not have liked it as much if it had come later, or maybe if the other four episodes hadn't been so terrible. But I think I really enjoyed the episode. It was a nice change of pace, and there were boats. Who doesn't like boats? There was a boat chase. It's great.
That's good.
It was awesome.
And of course, the one downside is the Asami Mako thing, which is ugh.
It worked in this episode with the song.
Yeah, I thought it actually worked. Okay. It worked.
It did work.
Yeah.
I cannot like it then.
Sam, what is your five?
Hold on. Chrome just stopped working. Let's see. My five is Beginnings Part 2. Because art. I didn't really have much to say. I just wanted to throw one of the beginnings in there because the art style is really good.
What such thinking involved?
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Britt, what was your five?
Light in the Dark.
What did you like about Light in the Dark?
It was good. It was a nice finale. It was made me not feel so hopeless as Darkness Falls did, which is... But I like Darkness Falls more. It was a nice wrap-up. It was a good ending. It had really pretty art. I thought Korra becoming Korrazilla was kind of neat. Dylan doesn't think so.
I don't think so, no.
It was, silly. I really was, whatever. So. There were some other things I liked. I liked the giant tree, because that was, Norse mythology, maybe? Because they have a giant tree in that thing that's really important. And you see Korra and Tenzin being like, hey, we have completed our story arc as mentor and avatar person, so yippee. And Korra becomes her own person. And it's this episode that I really like Korra because she stops acting like a child. And I don't mean that in a derogatory sort of, you're immature. You know, like it's like a personality thing. Like her, her arc that was a state of being. She was a child and she takes became an adult. Yeah. She grows up. Mm. And I like that. So.
Yeah. Light in the Dark is my number four. I think it's, I didn't really have anything to put above past three, so these are kind of random, but like I thought Light in the Dark's pretty solid. And despite giant plot leaps, I really like the ending and where direction they go in it. Sam, what's your four?
I just wanted to say that they said Light in the Dark because like a quote in like the first episode of the season, I think, I noticed. Mm-hmm. Anyway. My number four is This Thing, because of reasons.
Yes, thank you.
I feel like that's the only season two episode I've really liked. I don't know why. It's just like, it would seem like I wouldn't like it at all because it's like pretty much based on Mako. It's Mako centered, and they had like but I liked it a lot. Like, I don't know, something about it just made it really enjoyable to me. Asami was there. That's really nice. So yeah. That's how I feel.
Cool. Delaney, what's your four?
Out of the Past. Like, I know a lot of people are like, I don't like this episode. I loved it. Because we got to see Svex the Elder Aang and Todd. Like, I just loved the flashbacks. I really enjoyed them. And that was kind of, there was kind of a growth thing for Korra in there, too. Yeah, she was in a box. She kind of had to do something. But, I really liked Out of the Past.
Britt, what's your four?
My four is Darkness Falls.
Why do you like Darkness Falls more than Light in the Dark?
Because I am a what's it called? When you like putting yourself, I don't know, I like that it's dark. I like that we got an ending. I like that Vatu got free. I liked that it was really pretty, and I remember liking it. That's why.
Great. Okay. Good explanations there. Okay. My three is the revelation.
I remember now. I liked the Genora stuff that happened. I liked the stuff. Like, I liked the B plots a lot. Not that the A plot was bad necessarily, but I liked the B plots a lot.
And it had talking mushrooms.
Talking mushrooms. Yeah. Talking mushrooms.
All right. My three is the revelation, which is.
It's my number three.
Okay. Good. We can both talk about it. Just really like pretty much that the episode like has its own self-contained plot. The only episode where Mako is bearable, which is a
in
plus.
In
season one. That also has the sting going for it in Spoke 2. And Amon's great in this, and the rally at the end is really good. Britt, what do you like about it?
Same thing you said, but I honestly really like the animation of this episode. Like, if you want to go through an episode and, like, see Korra animation at its best, I think this one would be it. Just because they're running around through, like, the dark parts of, like, the industrial parts of Republic City, and it's really dark and shadowy, and, like, the way everything is colored is beautiful. Not talking about CGI, but, like, everything else that happens is lovely. And there's just a bunch of moments in the animation where everything is, like, it looks beautiful. The fight scenes are great. You see Mako and Bolin really bend in, like, a non-pro-bending place for the first time, and this is the first time we really see Amon, and we see him take someone's bending away, and it's just, I could have placed it higher, but I didn't. But it's a good episode. I remember enjoying it thoroughly. It's where the mystery begins.
Yes,
I feel like I'm the only person who doesn't like this episode as much as everybody else.
It's okay.
I just don't, like, I don't know, I just don't see, like, the appeal. I don't know.
I think book one's pretty hard to evaluate overall.
So well, I just think it's because, like, in general, I hated Mako so much in the season one that I just can't stand, like, him at all.
He was tolerable in this episode, because this is, like, the first couple of episodes where he hadn't, like, morphed quite awfully yet, you know?
I mean, I like that they were in disguise and stuff, but, like, I don't know, I just didn't, I wasn't really struck by this episode.
Mm-hmm. Sam, what is your three?
My three is Out of the Past.
Yay.
I don't want to say just because old stuff, like Aang and stuff, but kind of, yeah. Taka is real.
Just own it.
Let's put it out there. Talk is real.
I don't think this episode supports that, but
yes, okay. It does. I don't know. I feel like it's a really solid episode. I think it's probably one of the most solid episodes Korra has. I don't know, just like the inclusion of, you know, all our old characters, and I don't know, it just...
And they led up to it well.
I really liked the animation of Korra when she's in the box. Like, I feel like the look of that is really great. Like, I love that look. Just, like, the colors, like, the, like, steel blue, like, gray, and, like, the, like, animation of the sweat on her was, like, really amazing, and, like, especially, like, the animation at night with the snow, that was really nice. I really like that. I didn't like Mago being a poop face, but, you know, whatever. Lin was there. Lin was great.
Yep, it's important.
So, Lin's always important.
Yes.
So that's why I like that episode.
Cool. Delaney, what's your three?
And the winner is...
Really?
Yes. What? What, the cosplay? It's awesome.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
I mean, that, like, that stuff happens too.
My last rewatch, I skipped that.
A lot of people really like this one.
Unless I'm thinking of the wrong episode name.
No, this is totally this. Wrong. This has the end with Lin and Korra swinging from the.
It's just like the probe ending.
I was so like stunned when that they were coming out of the crowd. Like, I did not expect that at all. Like, not the fact that like I could see it happening from like a plot perspective, but like the fact that they did it on a kids' television show and they did that. Like, I was just completely in awe of them doing that. Like, it was genius, and I loved it.
That scene was probably one of the best scenes.
Yes.
It's just amazing. And like, of course, because there's all that build up to the pro bending like championship, and then this happens. And it's like, oh my god. And then of course Spider-Lin happens. Which is important.
I think we all get like overshadowed with like the bad like love triangle stuff that happens in this episode that we never remember, like the fights or like the equalist stuff that happens. It's really good.
I just like the pro bending usually. Yeah, it's really hard to get through that episode with
But like when they just coming out of the crowd like made this episode for me. Like that entire like last bit of the episode was just amazing.
Mm-hmm. All right. We did Brit, right?
Yes.
Okay. My two is Beginnings Part Two.
Well, I have both of my Beginnings as Part Two.
Yeah. I don't think that's allowed. I think you cheated.
Yes, it is. It's Part One and Two.
Like, because I can't separate the two very well. Like, they're just the begin. They're just Beginnings.
You cheated. You have to. You're kicked out of the list.
Well, I did the same thing. So you're going to kick me out too.
I'd probably say Beginnings Part Two is better.
Beginnings Part One significantly. Not. I mean, they're both high quality, but I think two is much better than one. I don't know. Two is very, very good. I need to rewatch it. Just has a very good epic feel. The art is really good. And even though the Lion Turtle stuff doesn't necessarily make sense, it's cool.
Art.
Which is young. Anticipating it for so long, and I think that they really delivered.
I agree.
Like, I was very pleased with it. Like, it was great, and Juan's cool. I like Juan. And, like, I don't know. Like, the direction they went with it, I wasn't expecting. Like, I didn't think, like, it didn't occur to me that this is how Juan was going to become the Avatar. Like, I wasn't expecting it. Now, like, in the middle of the episode, I was like, okay, I see where this is going. But, like, you know, I didn't know that, like, going into the episode, this is what was going to happen.
Yeah, and these are ranked as your number two?
Yes.
What about Brit? Are these...
Yeah, I put them both as one and two.
As one and two? Okay.
No, the, like, Beginnings Part One and Two are both two.
Are both two, okay.
And so, it's going to remain two.
Okay, that's fine. But yeah, so anything else to say about Beginnings? Brit?
I'm thinking.
I feel like it was the saving grace of season two. Like,
yeah, like that's when like it's like the sting and then everything was just sort of like uphill, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This was like one of the best episodes. Like, I wouldn't say it was like an It was a good episode. It was just good, okay? I'm just going to say that. It was good. I love the animation. It worked as an origin story. It worked as an episode. It worked as a kid's show. It worked having more complex themes. It was good. And I liked Juan. And I liked the tree man that has that really complicated disease that I can't remember nor pronounce, so it wouldn't really matter. And then I liked that you got his little arc. We got an entire character in like one scene, and then like I like the ending where he's like, I have failed, and it's like a battle, and he's an old man dying. Like, I thought that was really bold, and it was.
And I think, isn't, well, aside from like Amon, but, like, I don't even think we can count Amon. Like, this is the first time we actually saw a character die on screen. Like, we know Amon died, but we didn't see him. Does that make sense?
Yeah, we know. We watched
this guy die.
We know that Jet died. We didn't see that on screen. We didn't
Jet
see
and, Jet and kind of Roku, too.
And we did see Roku die on screen.
A little bit.
It's different from, like, seeing, like, we saw the light leave. We saw, like, the spirit leave Juan.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, we saw him hard.
Why are we seeing all these people die?
Because death happens in life.
Very morose.
Like, it didn't really strike me until I watched the episode the second time, and I was like, we just watched a character die on screen. I don't think this has actually happened. Like, I mean, characters have died, and we know they've died, but, like, we saw, like, we watched him die. There was a death scene.
Yes.
As opposed to him just, like, exploding, or...
Yeah. Sam, what is your two?
Everybody's gonna hate me.
This will be the most interesting one.
My number two is The Spirit of Competition.
The most hated episode of Korra.
The most hated episode of Korra is my number two favorite.
Why do you like A Spirit of Competition?
I don't know. I just do.
Like, no, explain why, come on.
I don't know. It's just...
See, what I think is interesting about this is you always say that you don't understand teenagers. And...
Yeah, I don't.
But this is all about teenage stuff.
I know. It's just really, like, simple and just, like, I don't care. Like, love triangle, whatever. You know, that's, like, the main focus of the episode. Like, I like Bolin. He's in this episode a lot. I like Korra. Korra is fun. Like, I don't, it's just, I feel, it's just a really entertaining episode. And just, like, it entertains me. It makes me happy.
Those are good things.
Isn't that enough?
It should be noted that the AV Club Korra reviewer, trying to find her name again, no, that's two people filling in for her. But she said that was her favorite episode, and she put it on, like, the best of 2012.
Thank you, person. At least you're with me.
Emily Gundelsberger.
Thank you, Emily.
Yeah.
You have a fun last name. But, yeah, it's just, I just really like it. It makes me happy, and, yeah, shipping.
One of the things Emily said about it is that it's one of the most realistic portrayals of, like, teenage drama, romance drama, and it's, like, not, like, stereotypically done.
Not Dawson's Creek.
Yeah. I think the Bolin Korra scenes are really fun. Yeah, and we get the Bolin's Korra is the buffest, toughest line.
Buffest, toughest, yeah. Most amazingest girl in the world.
Yeah, which is one of the more memorable ones from the season.
She's strong, I'm strong. She's fun, I'm fun.
Yeah.
She's beautiful, I'm gorgeous.
Yeah, it was really good.
I know a lot of... I've seen this episode too many times.
I think that people take out their frustration with Mako and the love triangle on this episode. When some of the actions are questionable in it, it's still really interestingly executed.
Really quotable episode.
I think it's one of the least forgettable episodes of Book One.
Definitely.
I will admit
I hate love triangles, and it prevents me from ever liking this episode. But before like the kiss and stuff, like it was a good episode.
I was very close to putting this on my number one.
Okay. You should have done it.
But I didn't want everybody to kill me. So.
You should have done it. It would have been more interesting.
Yes.
Well, is this on your list? No.
No.
So.
Yeah.
I am interested.
Okay. I think those were the beginnings were all our twos. Mine one is not a surprise. A New Spiritual Age. We did a whole podcast commentary on it. Just engaging. Character building for Jenora, and I'm going to talk more about New Spiritual Age in one of my lists, so I'll save it for that. Sam, what is your number one?
My number one is A Voice in the Night.
Yes.
It's a good episode.
Thank you, Sam.
Is that your one, Delaney?
Yes. How did you not know that? This is like my favorite episode ever.
I didn't know that either.
I swear I've said it before.
No, you have, yeah.
It's my favorite.
I think for me, it just has like everything. It has like a dark aspect. It has funny stuff. It has like the Bolin and the Bora, just little ship.
I think the Bolin Korra scene's one of the best of season one in this episode, with Bolin bringing Korra flowers and stuff.
The nasty dude. I just really like this episode. And the ending, like that's It's like such a good ending. It's like the animation, probably my favorite piece of animation ever is when like she goes in and like the Equalists like have her and like she firebends so that there's light and then the firebend like fades and then it's just like the red of their eyes. And that's just so cool. So, yep.
Yeah. Like, for me, it was, like, the dark aspect to it. Like, it's another one of those episodes that shocked me. That, like when she's walking and they grab her, and I'm like, oh my god, what are they gonna do? Like, you don't even know what, like, it's just so dark. And, like, you had no idea what was gonna happen. It was just, it's one of those few times in Korra and, like, TV in general where I was genuinely shocked. Not necessarily about the events, but, like, that they would do that on the kids show.
Yeah.
And then, like, as you said, the animation was gorgeous. And just, it was so emotional. Like, it's like the last 5 minutes of that episode were so emotional.
And then, of course, watch out, Daddy, we're driving here.
That was that. I don't even remember that.
When did I Will Make No Such Promises happen? Did that happen here?
Ooh, that might have been this episode.
It might have been this episode.
Yeah.
I think it was the beginning when they were all eating, like, breakfast, dinner stuff.
Is the Mr. Ponytail Man scene in
yes,
this one?
That's this one.
Okay, that's this one.
Then, Mr. Ponytail Man.
Yeah, this is a strong one.
Big to do. That's in this.
I guess I don't love it because I don't really like the ending with him.
I thought this was your favorite episode. I thought for sure that this was going to be in your top.
No, I mean maybe I'll like it more on rewatch, but I don't like the Amon stuff in this that much. I don't like the
I don't really
like the creepy undertones.
I remember you saying that this maybe like you thought that it was one of the most well done.
I will say that this is the best title of any episode ever.
The best title. This is number 6 on my list of when I made top 10. So just so you know, I also missed this episode.
And what is your one, Brit?
Take a wild guess. It's the Sting. Because I just like it. And I've like talked about it before like it. Where I like it, but I like it. It's a complete episode. You have Mako acting like a human being and, you know, focusing on one person, actually trying to help this person unselfishly, which you really don't see him do before. And then he does the detective thing and you kind of see him like evolving. Like, this is the episode where I decided I didn't like hate him with a raging passion anymore. I was like, I like this. This is okay. I can work towards forgiving you for season 1. You know? And it has Asami in it. I love Asami. I felt like everyone in this episode acted like a complete person. Like, and not just like a flat stereotype sort of character, which kind of happened earlier. And it had a good plot. It had a complete plot. It had a complete idea. It had, you know, it made sense what was happening in, like, relation to the rest of the story, which the first couple of episodes did not, and you know what was going on, and you could feel for the characters, and the animation was really pretty, and there was a boat chase, and, well, the background's really pretty. This one had some odd faces.
The Sting's a really strong episode.
I really like it.
It also had a two-toed Ping. What is
his name? Yes.
Capitalism like that is actually a dominant gene, but nobody has it. So, there you go.
Good. Okay. Yeah, I think that's good for episodes. Any other comments?
Nope, I'm good.
Yeah, some pretty varying. All of you need to appreciate New Spiritual Age more, but that's okay.
It made my honorable mentions. Normally, it wouldn't have been on there at all.
That's good.
Okay. It was really hard to pick episodes because I didn't want to put Spirit of Competition number 1.
You should have done it anyway.
Because that's like one of the episodes. I really enjoy that episode.
I need to rewatch book 1.
Yeah, you did.
Let's get back to our general top 10 list. Britt, what is your top 10 list?
My top 10 list is top 10 favorite animation moments.
Okay, so you need to like explain this audioly, even though it's not necessarily a word.
Yeah, verbally. I wrote out where they are and like what episode. Like, it's a specific moment. It's not like a random cloud from book 3. Okay, let's start at the bottom. My 10th favorite one is the boat scene in Endgame, like at the very very end where it's what are their names? Amon and Tarlok. On the boat, and like there's lots of wind and the sun is setting, and I love like One of my favorite things with Avatar in Korra animation is how the sun looks oftentimes, especially in Korra, where it's like very dramatic and it's beautiful, and then there's like the kaboom, and it was lovely. And then number 9 was the carnival in the Southern Water Tribe during Rebel Spirit. Peridot animation was like bad with people. Like they looked really odd, but I always found their like backgrounds and like the spirits really beautiful, and like the carnival and the way the colors were drawn with the paper lanterns and everything was lovely. Mm. And then number 8 was in the Avatar and the Fire Lord. There's a scene where Zuko is waiting, and they show with the moon how, like, the passing of time, and explains visually how he waited for the changing of the guards to, like, move so he could sneak in, which was pretty cool because it showed it move from 9 to 12, and that's when the changing of the guard happens and, like, all such stuff. And
but yeah, we should mention this is Avatar 2. I don't know if I zoned out or not. But
yeah, it's just Avatar.
This is our first list that's, I think, both Korra and Avatar.
Yeah, I did both Korra and Avatar because doing just Korra would have been silly.
Yeah.
Then number 7 is the prison scene in season 3. And it's seen numerous times. It's the one that Iroh is held in, that Zuko goes to. And just like the outside, how it's like carved into the mountainside. And I don't know what they did, but it looks really pretty with all the shading. And it's like the red windows. That was pretty. And then number 6 is this, like, use the Sozin's Comet. When you see it, when Sokka, Suki, and Toph are all riding the eel hound. And, like, even Suki comments on how it looks beautiful. It's red, and there's, like, the red clouds. And there's, like, a little flock of birds flying around. And then number 5 is at the end of Crossroads of Destiny, when they're all like riding on Appa, and Gitara uses spirit water, and it's literally the only like real big source of light other than, I don't think the moon is present in that episode. It's like hidden by cloud cover, which is really interesting how like they made it like look like cloud cover. Even I don't think we see the sky, but it has like that glowing effect, and you see it like glowing, and then she heals Aang with it, and there's a wind, and it's nighttime, and it's pretty. And I appreciate pretty. And then number 4 was another Korra one. And it's in the revelation towards the very beginning. There's a scene where Jinora, I think the rest of the air babies are, they're like practicing their airbending with the swirly fan thingies. Mm-hmm. Whatever they're called. And it's morning and you get the beautiful look of the sunrise, which they always do very well. Or the sunrises and sunsets. Like in photography, we call that the golden hours. Because of the way it looks, and we've known that Brian likes to incorporate like photography elements into the animation, so I appreciate it. And then number 3 was the eagle is coming out of the dark, and all you see is their eyes. This might be the same scene that Sam was talking about.
That was the one I was talking about.
It's either that one or it's the one where like they're on a train. It could not for the life of me find out exactly what episode this was in. I like scoured through.
It's his Voice in the Night, right?
Caps. It might have been Voice in the Night, but it's basically like all you see is their eyes, and it's very
scary. Yeah.
And my number 2 was Siege of the North Part 2, when Aang goes into the spirit world, and he's like connecting with the ocean spirit, and he like walks into the dark pond, and it's literally just black, and then he like floats down. Like, just visually, that is breathtaking. I think I literally did not breathe that whole like 2 minute like interval scene at the end of Siege of the North Part 2. Like, literally, I was just in shock. Little 14-year-old me or 12-year-old me. Unreal. It's so beautiful. And number 1, it's the sunset overlooking Ba Sing Se during the Katang kiss of the series finale. Because purple and pink clouds, I mean. Can you really get better than that? And they're on a balcony and
they kiss.
It was really pretty, and it was like a romantic movie, but in a good way, and there were pink and purple clouds. And those are my top 10.
Yeah, that was a very strong one, the kiss of this visuals at the end of the...
Definitely.
Yeah.
That's
an interesting concept for a list, visual moments.
Yeah,
visual. I try to go for backgrounds, but that's harder to do on the podcast.
I suggested that.
I couldn't do backgrounds, so I wouldn't animate.
Yeah. I think that visually, my favorite episode would be the Puppet Master. Like, I think just some of the backgrounds.
They aired that like as like a Halloween thing, mm-hmm. I remember.
Some of the backgrounds in that episode are super good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't think of any specific moments, though, so the constraints of the list. Okay, very good, Britt. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Let's do my... I think this is the weaker of my two remaining lists, but I'll do this one now. To break it, because it's too negative.
You're going to get mad at me if I say...
My first list? I think
your
some
first list was the weakest.
Certain people... Well, you haven't seen the other two lists, so how do you know?
Because I couldn't understand the first one.
I think it was... I don't know. Certain people like that. Okay, I have top 10 female-to-female interactions in Avatar.
The
or
Bechdel Korra. Test.
Yeah, so this is two females interacting.
Did you actually do the Bechdel test?
No. This isn't an attempt to do the Bechdel test. This is just finding... Because this is one of the things you notice is that Avatar Korra is very male-based, dominated, and there's not many females talking to each other in Korra. Surprisingly, when I went over my memory of the episodes of Avatar, I couldn't find many actually from Avatar. There's certainly some, and I'll give you the top 10, but there's...
Katar.
There's really, yeah, a lot of Katar and Toph ones, but it's just, it's not that much, even though there's a lot of
female. I think a lot of it is because, like, as opposed with Korra, where, like, you do have a lot of moments where, like, characters are by themselves, and Avatar, they're all together most of the time. Like, everyone's together. Like, Sokka, Katara, Aang are always together.
Yeah, that's true. Any male presence disqualified. This for me on here. Okay. And if you... And it's... I didn't rewatch Avatar to do this, so... It's very possible I'm forgetting some, which you guys should point out. But yeah, this is for both Avatar and Korra. The honorable mention I have is Azula interacting with Mei and Ty Lee in the beach.
How come that isn't on your list?
See, when I think of the beach, I think of Zuko interacting with them at the end, which isn't what we want here. We have Azula asking like Ty Lee for like love advice.
I think that's funny.
Which is good. But I think there's some strong ones too. So, yeah, I think there's stronger ones, but that is a very good one. 10 is, I thought I ranked this higher, Toph and Suki in The Serpent's Pass, with the kiss on the cheek and mistaking Suki for, yeah, we discussed this on the Heteronormativity podcast, but this is actually a really well-handled scene, I think, for what the subject matter. And pretty strong interaction between two characters we never see interact otherwise. More on Suki in my other list, not in a positive way. Number 9, I have Katara and Azula fighting in the third part of the series finale, which is just briefly. It's after the thing, but
yeah,
female-female fights are sparse, and this is a good one. 8 is Katara and Toph, the first of a few, in The Runaway. Katara like comforting Toph with the whole parents thing, and this episode's kind of focused on these two, I think.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, which is pretty strong. Not the best episode, but I think their interactions, especially towards the end of this episode, are good. 7, I have first instance of Korra, Katara and Korra in the first episode of Korra, when Korra's setting out on her journey.
Are dead.
Yeah, exactly. This is one I kind of forgot about, but in a late edition. But this is. Looking for instance of two females in Korra, this is one of the only ones that comes to mind, and it's a pretty
really,
good one.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's like, and even if there really were more, like this one would be like, it's a really strong one.
Mm-hmm, I agree. 6 is another Katara and Toph one, this time in Tales of Ba Sing Se, their little tale thing with they go to the
makeup
spa and they have the other people teasing them.
This is
one of my favorite like episodes.
So
with them.
Great.
So beautiful.
Yeah,
this, you're pretty tough.
Yeah, that seems very good. 5, I have Azula and Ty Lee in The Return to Amashu, so the introduction to Ty Lee scene.
Hugs.
It's like Azula manipulating Ty Lee into coming with them.
Mm-hmm.
Very strong, nice. I think.
Come with me and you'll be...
4, I have...
End of pure imagination.
Four, I have, you can argue that this should be higher. Mei and Ty Lee and Azula in Boiling Rock Part 2. The Betrayal.
Yeah, I agree it should be higher.
Well, I have some pretty strong ones, but yeah. This is...
What's stronger than that?
Well, you'll see, but this is obviously very good. The thing that like maybe sets it back a little is there's not much actual interaction. It's just like... Like, Mei and Ty Lee aren't talking. It's like Mei and Ty Lee make their decisions not vocally, right? Yep. It just kind of happens, but it's still good. Three, I have Lin and Korra in, and the winner is, and good. Also you can add in the first episode too, but Lin and Korra in general, but just Lin saving Korra and from falling and then going after the guys.
Oh, I should have.
Yeah, it's a very, very strong scene. Two is the one that I think the first thing you think of when you think of female interactions in Avatar is Katara and Toph in the chase.
Yes.
Yes, definitely.
Madame Fussy Precious.
And then Sugar Queen. And yeah, all that stuff.
Too bad you can't see them, Toph. Sorry, because you're blind.
We have two very strong presences. Like, these are the two strongest personalities in the group, and it's good that they clash right away. Not the strongest episode, but very good scenes here. And number one is Korra and Jinora in a new spiritual age. The entire episode is focused on this. This is very unprecedented in Avatar
history. Jinora totally has a crush on Korra.
Okay, explain this headcanon, Sam.
I don't know. It's just like, I just get that feeling.
Okay, that's it. Okay, never mind. Bitter Work. I thought of Bitter Work, but Bitter Work is the only time we see Katara and Toph interacting is this one scene where Katara is like, you need to teach Aang with positive reinforcement. Yeah, that could be an honorable mention.
When I first thought it, like when you said this, I was like, I'm sure Bitter Work is on there just because, like, when I really think of Bitter Work, I just like the clashing of Toph and Katara. Like,
yeah, to me, most of it is not direct clashing though, which makes it a little hard to put on here. There's that one scene though where she talks to Toph. Yeah. It is a strong one though. But yeah, I think the moral of looking at this is that just takeaways are there's not much in Avatar actually.
At least we have our two strong female characters who actually interact, like our main female characters who work.
Well, we'll talk about Suki in one matter list, but yeah, that's such a good term.
What am I supposed to say? Like, I don't know how else to communicate my idea.
I don't know. Yeah, that is such a phrase that's so ingrained in our use. But Katara and Toph, definitely the most prevalent interaction that I found here.
The only interaction.
But yeah, I mean, also, Mei, Ty Lee, and Azula is also very strong. Okay. Delaney, give us your second list.
All right. I have the top 10 accessories/outfits in Korra and Avatar. So, I thought I'd do something fun and just unexpected. So I did accessories/outfits. It's really mainly outfits, I think.
I think the big question is, where will the headband rank? That's the big question.
I don't even have this on my list. What's wrong with me?
Come on, Delaney. Come on. God. It's just a belt, but he's...
it's just a belt.
Okay. Any honorable mentions or number 10? Yes,
honorable mentions, the headband, because I didn't put it on my list. My list is pretty great, so you'll see, like, I didn't think about it, because it's just a belt. Anyway, Zuko's pajamas, they crack me up. Like, he just wears them out. It's like, you're wearing your pajamas. Like, what are you doing, Zuko? When he's in the Fire Nation Palace, it's his pajamas, and then he goes adventuring with Aang in them. Like, it's his pajamas. And then, I have a... Azula, like, I don't necessarily know if it's actually her, like, it's really more of, like, how Azula looks in, it's the episode before the headband, is it The Awakening? Yeah, the headband's the second episode.
Yeah, The Awakening,
The Awakening, the where that really creepy bedroom scene with Azula and Zuko. Like, I don't know if it's, like, how she looks in general, but, like, Yeah, it's her hair, and I'm just like, this is so weird, and but lack I love of it.
Makeup.
But then it's really creepy because
lack of accessories.
Yes. And then Aang's toga thing. Like, his rip robe. Like, I really like it.
Yes. Fire Nation pants.
Yes. Into actual numbers. I don't actually think I have a 10. Okay, that makes sense. I guess... What did I make 10? What the heck? Anyway.
Obviously, it's the headband.
Yeah, 10 is the headband.
Okay, continuing.
Alright, 9. Boomy's earmuffs.
Okay, yeah, that's a strong one.
Like, they're pink. Like, okay, Boomy. I think you actually wore them once, but
I have pink earmuffs actually.
So you hate them or you have them?
No, I have them.
Okay, you can be Boomy too, Sam.
There you go.
I can't.
Why not?
Yes, you will. You will be Boomy. You will rise to the occasion.
And this is where Iki made my list. Number 8, her hair things. Like, yes. What are they? Like, yes. What? It's, like, tough. And, like, her hair made no sense. And Iki's hair makes no sense. It's great.
I remember once, Nickelodeon had, like, a commercial thing where they listed off, like, facts about whatever. And they said that Toph is, like, 5'3 with her bun.
Nickelodeon makes a lot of things up.
I don't know. I'm 5'3".
Yeah, like,
You're Toph and Boomy, apparently.
Not with her bun. That's with, like, the top of her head. Toph would have to be, like, my height. Which is short.
That bun is, like, at least 5 inches. Like, at least. It's ridiculous.
I feel like I knew the name of Iki's things at some point. I said what they were. I don't know how I knew that, though.
They're like some sort of hair ornament.
They must have said it in the commentary.
They're like fuzzy balls. I don't know what they are. They're just little hair.
They're like little cloth claps that you put on top of the hair to keep it. It's like piggy tails, but your piggy tails are too short. So, I don't know. They look cute
on
her.
She's like piggy buns. Like, what is this?
Yes.
My number 7 is, I think we kind of talk about this on the headband, but like Toph's shoes, like just the fact that she, like, it's just cool that she did it. Like, she hadn't thought, like, I just liked it. Her shoes in season 3 where she knocks the feet out of them. I just thought it was.
How did they stay on? Like, I was questioned. How did this stay on?
I'm assuming Fire Nation people just have, like, really, like, sturdy shoes. Like, because how do you keep the point? Like, their shoes are sturdy. Like, it's, I doubt they're very comfortable.
In the commentary for 105, Mike and Brian said Iki's things are called snoods.
Oh, okay.
There you go. Snoods. I looked it up.
All right, so my number 8 is Iki's snoods.
Yes.
Alright, so 6, Asami's jacket. Or just in general, everything Asami wears.
Yeah, can we just,
like,
have
everything
Asami,
Asami wears. Like, that should be
so fabulous. Like, she's like, why Asami? Why are you, like, you're the best dressed character in all of Avatar. Like, ever. And then...
Her and Korra need to have, like, a shopping trip where they talk about their problems and look fabulous.
Yes, definitely.
Shop for weapons and shoes.
Yes! Oh, that'd be great.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be fantastic. And then number 5, Tenzin's fancy clothes, like his little rope thing. I love those. They're great.
He's like angry Santa Claus.
Should be Santa Claus.
Like, it's so funny because, like, it's like his normal outfit, and he just, like, puts on a red cloak, and he's like, I'm fancy. It's like, okay, Tenzin, who dressed you? Did Pima let you out of the house like that? I'm surprised. Like, so funny. And then number 4. I labeled the Katang necklace, and by this I mean the flower necklace.
That Aang gives to her in The Fortune Teller.
Yes.
Yes.
Ah.
So,
Tang
mainly
feels.
Because feels.
That should be number 1.
My number 1, you'll understand why my number 1 is.
Okay.
But, so, yep, 4, Katang necklace. 3, Sokka's war helmet, the wolf helmet.
That's a strong one, too.
It's so cool. Like, I want it. It's so awesome.
You should make one.
I should. I agree. And then number 2, Azula's breastplate. Like, it's so ridiculous.
Like, how does she fight in that? I don't know, but she does.
Like, Azula's armor has all, like, I love it. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It just cracks me up. And, like, you know it's not very, you can't really move in it, because, like, in a, I think, like, it's in the headband in the flashback when they take it off of Zuko.
Mm-hmm. If and the then people it, take it off of him.
Yeah, and it's like, Azula, how do you, like, fly around and kill people in your breastplate? Like, I don't get it. But no, so that had to be number 2. And then number 1, Lin's trench coat.
Yes.
Is the best
that's true.
Thing ever. Like,
I thought you were gonna put Sokka's space sword.
I don't know if that counts as an accessory.
I almost put boomerang. Like, boomerang.
Sokka's bag. Sokka's
That bag,
bending
His bag.
The bag and the belt. How could you?
Yeah, the bag and the belt match.
How did I forget? Oh, I'm so disappointed in myself with that.
The Lin's coat's a strong one, though.
Yeah, like, only Lin can rock the trench coat. Like, yeah. Lin is fab in her trench coat. It's the best thing ever. So those are my accessories.
Does Aang's hair count as an accessory?
It should.
No.
If it does, it's number 1. Aang's hair is better than Lin's trench coat if a hair counts.
Dude. What if the I wonder if Tenzin ever had hair.
Oh, like, God, no. If, what, like, if he had, like, long hair?
I imagine Tenzin with, like, an afro.
I read this fanfic where Tenzin had hair.
Like long hair, like surfer hair. Yes.
Yeah. Like it's like braided in the back.
No, he'd have long and like luxurious.
Long, flowing hair.
Tenzin slash Fabio, like long, flowing locks.
And then he like masters airbending and cries as he shaves it off.
Yes.
I wonder if Tenzin actually looks cute when he was younger. He just looks like.
Okay, this is a great discussion.
Okay, he looks so old. Count,
he is the child of Aang and Katara. This dude was gorgeous when he was young. Okay.
He should have been.
Okay, thank you, Delaney. Great list.
We should have done top 10 good looking.
No.
Oh, wait, we have to do quotes. We have to do quotes.
Okay, after, Brit and Sam, do you have additional lists or no?
No.
Okay.
Yes, I have the quote list.
Okay, well, we'll do that after my third list.
We all did it
together. Okay. I have top 10 worst characters in Avatar and Korra.
Wow. Negative.
So, yeah. So, in compiling this list, you discover that there actually aren't that many bad characters in Avatar and Korra. There's a pretty clear four. And then
one is no, I'm
and
sure.
Then
like
one.
Bad characters as like Avatar, like as in like villains or like bad
no,
characters?
As in horribly executed characters.
Okay.
Yeah, so like they were, it's like Mako. You know, he's gonna be up there, right? He's bad. They handle him badly. He doesn't add anything, like stuff like that. So I think there's a pretty clear four, maybe five, and then there's five that you could say they don't necessarily do what they want them to do. They're not successful. And I should say, I only picked characters that are of significance to the plot, I would say. They have to, like, be significant in at least one episode. So you can't just pick, like, Old Sweepy. Although I don't know why you would ever pick Old Sweepy for worst, because he's the best. So
exactly. He is the best.
Yeah. Okay.
Like putting Foamy on the list. Like, Foamy, like...
Yeah, Foamy, yeah. He's too insignificant. So 10. So then, towards the end of this list, it's just kind of personal opinion. 10, I would say General Iroh. Now Delaney's upset, but General Iroh, I feel like, is very badly handled throughout the series.
Yeah, I agree that he's badly handled, but I still love him.
I think pretty much everything about him is kind of poorly executed. Starting at his voice, which I've now come around to not liking Dante Basco, voicing that in the same Zuko voice. But
that's his voice.
I think that was the point. We just had to have a Zuko 2.0.
Yeah, obviously we had to. In season 2, he was not present too much, but the one scene he had was him talking with Korra in Peacekeepers, which was horrible. That scene was awful.
Yes.
And then his role in the book 1 finale, I think, is pretty poorly executed because he's supposed to be a significant character, but he has no lead up, no
development.
I think
it's kind of like what they did with Iroh, except they had more intentions behind it, but they didn't, I mean original Iroh, like,
yeah.
Old Iroh, like, they wanted, like, they did it, like, the way, but they didn't, but they had a lot more intent behind baby Iroh, like, they had more, does that make sense? Like, they expected more out of baby Iroh, because, like original Iroh, like, they're like, we're gonna make everyone die and then he's gonna serve a little bit of a purpose, but like baby Iroh was supposed to be like really significant, but he didn't end up being that way.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't know, I just think this character is very misplaced. Hopefully they'll do better with him later. Number 9 is the Mechanist. I don't really think the Mechanist does what they want him to do.
Is it the Mechanist or the Machinist?
It's the Mechanist.
Mechanist.
You mean like Sparky Sparky Boo Man?
No, Mechanist from the Northern Air Temple.
Eyebrows.
Who builds the Who builds
Two's
the thing?
Dead.
I think he's supposed to be this interesting, complicated character, but he's not really. They don't give him enough backstory. I don't think he's sympathetic at all, which is maybe on purpose. But
you're not sympathetic.
Okay,
I was mean to say. I'm sorry.
Oh, you're mean. Okay, but I don't know. I just don't think he's very. He's a minor character, but considering how much effect he has on the plot, he's.
Like he was central to the episode, and like nothing
yeah,
really.
And he's just more of a device, and he's kind of. 8, I have the Duke, who is thrust into this prominent role for no reason in book 3. And the Duke has nothing going on. There's no aspect of his character that's
You know
worthwhile.
Why I don't like the Duke?
Why?
Because there's a ship called the Doff.
The Doff is canon, so...
No, it isn't. I hate that ship so much. Don't even...
We ship them because they're both short.
They're both short, yeah.
No, no.
What does that make me?
I mean, I'll be honest,
Toph barfs in his helmet. Like, come on, canon.
No.
But, like, my thing is, like, honestly, like, when season three and there's the Duke, and I'm like, I don't even remember who you are. Like, yeah. Who are you?
It's just a very dumb character to bring back.
You don't understand. Like, that ship is the worst.
Like, the Duke is not a very good character. Seven is Gomu. Gomu was the hobo from book one of Korra.
Vagabond.
So just for, if he just appeared in episode one, they'd be fine. But then they bring him back and no, in the finale.
His brush sparkles. That was a bad thing to say.
I hate what he like represents. Like, they're making fun of like the homeless problem, but like more than that, he's just not an interesting character.
They turned them into sewer people.
Yeah, I just don't understand this character. No, he's kind of dumb.
He's supposed to be silly, but he didn't really.
Like, I feel like they were trying to. It felt like a really sad attempt of having like another original Boomy character. Like, I got that feel. Like, they wanted like the crazy little adventure thing. Who this guy who doesn't make a lot of sense, but he's really helpful. Mm-hmm. And then it's like it just fell apart.
Yeah. Six. I have. I never pronounce his name right. Tio or Teo. Teo. Yeah. I don't
think they pronounce it both in like the show, so it's hard to know.
Like, I have no idea.
I don't like him. More than that.
I don't like that you don't like him.
That's the problem with him. He's just there.
That's mean. More
he's
than
just there, but I don't like.
So
don't
the
like
problem is he's given
so
this.
Nice.
He's given this. I just really think the Northern Air Temple is a poorly executed episode. But he's given this this role. He's supposed to be sympathetic and stuff, and he's kind of just, I don't know. And he also like flirts with the Katara, so that's a no-no. And
Free country.
I don't know. I just don't think this character is successful in his role. And they bring him back, and he doesn't really do much. Okay, now we're getting to the serious ones. Five is Combustion Man. Combustion Man is a poorly conceived villain. His role in the show is bad. He's cool, but he has nothing going on. And it's...
Well, do you think he could have been executed better if he spoke, or do you think they could have done better even with him not speaking?
He could have not spoken. He just give us some, I don't know, backstory, some more going on with him, some emotions. Like, he's just a nothing villain.
Instead of just showing up and messing up conversations.
Yeah, there's just no reason for him to be there. I don't think he's necessarily, like, badly... He's more badly conceived than executed, I would say. Like, I think, at least visually and audially, like, he's very good. Like, how they executed him. But yeah, not a very good one.
It's just like, oh, Zuko hard hitman, cool.
Yeah, it's exactly. Like, hey. It's like, okay. Okay, now here's where it gets serious, the top four. Four is Suki. Suki's the worst. Suki's
some people who would beat you up.
Suki's very frustrating because when she's introduced in Warriors of Kyoshi, she's not only not a bad character, she's an actively good character. She's interesting. She interacts well with the main characters. Like, she teaches, she represents something while still having more than that. She's just very well done. She's brought back twice. The first time they bring her back in Serpent's Pass, she is mostly an object for Sokka to, I'm forgetting the word, but like, care about. And
she's like a prop.
Yeah.
And it's just one of the worst bringbacks, and then it somehow gets worse when they bring her back in season three. She becomes even more of a prop, and the one time that she does something, it's like, whoa, that girlfriend, Sokka, yeah, what a girl in Boiling Rock.
It's like, and it's like, oh, what about when Appa's Lost stays?
Right, so that's fine. That was better. So I guess they bring her back four times. That was better. But in season three, though, which is mostly why she gets here, she's just the worst. She's actually... God. That character is nothing. There's nothing behind her. I don't know.
She exists.
It's the worst callback, I think.
She helped save Sokka and Toph's lives, so...
So great. Something. Yeah, she's like a walking prop who actively... influences the plot one time. Good.
Like, she does stuff, but like, she's not a person.
She's not a person. She's really not.
Not as much as a person as you could have been a ward.
Exactly. Number three are people, or I'm grouping two people together who no one ever remembers, Xinfu and Master Yu.
Those earthbending guys.
You have no idea. These are the people that Toph's parents say, go find Toph in book two.
And then they just get like,
okay, I got you. Oh, the box.
And then they trap Toph in the box,
so
yeah.
Silly. It was so silly.
I
wonder if they died in that box.
This is a case of, let's write these additional villains, and then we forgot about them. They appear in...
I didn't even know they had names. Like,
okay. Yeah, they appear in the Earthbending, tournament? What's that episode actually called? The Blind Bandit. That was the original name. The Blind Bandit, the library, and then in the finale, or the episode before the finale, or whatever. And they're just nothing. They're absolutely no personality, no character. They're poorly conceived, poorly introduced to the plot. They're kind of amusing when they talk to each other, actually, but...
I ship them.
I know, right? But like, they're just bad villains. They're the low point of... They're a thorn in the side of the great book two of Avatar.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Book two was the best book.
It was, in my opinion. Okay, two characters left. I think it's pretty obvious who they are, but two, an upset, is Mako and Nadu Nawak. Mako is awful, as we all know. But
you were beginning to like him, though.
But he would probably be one after book two, but now he's two because he's good in the sting, and that's kind of it.
Yeah.
He's just...
The award for not being as much as a jerk as you could have been.
Yeah, the thing with Mako is that they don't understand. The people writing him don't understand that he's acting badly, which is a problem.
They need more writers. It's
like,
too
they want him to be, like, this real romantic figure, and for everyone to be like, oh, we love Mo. It's like, no, we hate him. Stop.
The brooding... pretty boy is a fine line to walk between awful and sympathetic. And
like Zuko was.
Zuko, Mako, Jon Snow, etc. It's.
We don't hate on Jon Snow. I hate. Jon Snow does not give near as much goodness.
Jon Snow sucks.
And we make fun of Zuko.
You have seen Jon Snow like halfway through his character arc. This is like saying.
There's no way I'm going to like him.
Marceline the
No, he is like the only feminist, like hardcore feminist dude that pops out of like that series. Okay.
Okay, so that'd be good if he becomes that. Is.
You'll get that. Okay. You haven't gotten there. You're like book one Zuko.
I'm like book one Zuko. Mako is just not good. We all know that. Okay, now time to rant about Unalaq. Unalaq is by far the worst character ever introduced in Avatar and Korra. Unalaq actively bring downs what could have been a good season. He's a nothing villain, and somehow they don't give him anything. I don't understand.
Like Amon, except Amon halfway had a plan.
Cement block that drug down season two.
He's actually Amon is a good analog because Amon also had an interesting stuff going on. Or Amon had interesting stuff going on that they don't execute on giving him some sort of thing. But with Amon, it's expected that they don't bring anything in until the end because there's like a mystery god. Unalaq, there's no reason for them to wait until the finale. And they don't even execute on that. And he's not interesting the rest of the way. Like, he's nothing going for him.
He's just creepy. Like, that's...
He's not good. He's not even that creepy. He's just nothing.
He's like that weird guy that lives on the end of the street who you don't really talk to and has a lot of cats.
Is Unalaq Boo Radley?
Yes. No. Blue Radley was awesome.
Yeah, that's different. Creepy. Yeah. Unalaq, and him at the end of A New Spiritual Age is the worst thing ever. He's about to take away a 10-year-old girl's soul, and we don't understand why. And they never tell us why.
Rule of evil. He's just
evil. We never understand why he's
evil. I'm baffled that Mike DiMartino and Tim Hedrick and Josh Hamilton, to a lesser extent, but still him too, cannot think that they need to do something with him. It baffles me.
Like, look at Sozin. Even in the finale, like, we knew that the reason he was doing it because he was power hungry, but we knew it was cultural. Like, it had been, like, passed down to him from certain people who were
power hungry,
and just, like, the throne type deal. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like I understand.
Like, Ozai's not even... Ozai's not important to the plot as... I mean, he's the main villain, but he's not important to the plot as Unalaq is to book two, but even he is better executed at the end.
Yeah.
Like, we knew Azula is purely evil.
Azula is much better executed, obviously.
She would take away a little girl's soul, but we'd know why.
I don't think, Azula wouldn't randomly take away a soul.
She'd tell you about it while she's doing it.
It's just awful. Like, we get, like, they try to give a few point of view scenes from Unalaq, but they're just him being even more bad, and we don't understand why. Like, why do you not care about your son like that?
Like, what are you even doing?
Yeah, and why are you working with Vatu? We never know. Why...
Or how he found him.
Why do you want 10,000 years of darkness? We don't understand.
It's just, like, how do you not give the backstory?
And you know what they could have done that would have made it just slightly better? Like, it would have been kind of tolerable? If he would have said something about Vatu promised me whatever. Like, he does nothing. Like, it's like, okay, why are you doing this?
Like, I think if they should have taken out one of the awful episodes in, like, the first four and, like, did a backstory episode on the twins and him.
Yeah.
and Mama back in the Northern Water Tribe.
Like, is it because his wife died? Now he want like what? It, like we need something. Like it could have been bad as long as we had some sort of explanation for.
Get a backstory, I still think he's like a bad character, but he's not awful. Like because he's still not engaging while he's doing anything. Like Iman was.
But they could have made him engaging. Like he could have been definitely interesting.
Like he didn't even make me feel anything. I was just like, what are you doing?
It should be noted, I think Adrian Laterelle, who is his voice actor, I think actually is, like, pretty good in the role.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, especially at the beginning of the season, he's pretty obviously evil, but he's still kind of sympathetic, and I don't think that's the writing. I think that's him bringing life to that role.
Yes,
but I agree. It's just, he's just nothing to work with. I don't understand the character. I think it's Mike and Brian's, maybe their biggest failure, because obviously not executing on the Aang Avatar state in the series finale, but that's more forgivable because there's other stuff going on. The season hinges on Unalaq and it pretty much fails. This is why the finale, it's cool, but it doesn't work. This is why it's all because of Unalaq, I think.
Like, this is the first time we've actually had a pointless villain. Like, this villain served no purpose.
Well, so we had to, I named the other pointless villains, but the pointless villains didn't matter to the overall season. Combustion Man and Zinvu and Master Yu were both awful, but.
That's what I meant. Ozai, like, we understood Ozai. Like, he might not necessarily have been the best written or and he wasn't even there a lot, but Unalaq was all over the place and did nothing.
Yeah, like the other two villains you mentioned were one episode, two episodes max. Like them not being great wasn't as significant. And even the Combustion Man.
Like Unalaq was
he literally only served to show Suko's change from wanting the Avatar dead to literally saying, "I will pay you not to kill them." You know, that was his purpose. But
I think they tried to give I think they thought they were giving Unalaq a backstory when they gave Tanrak a backstory. But they gave Tanrak the backstory, not Unalaq, and then Tanrak's not significant to the plot at all.
But then it makes sense that Unalaq obviously isn't a good guy because he threw his brother up, but that still doesn't explain why he wants 10,000 years of darkness.
Yeah, it doesn't connect. It really doesn't.
Why? Maybe he had a good reason for throwing his brother out. Maybe his brother was kind of an idiot, and you're you're gonna destroy the whole tribe. We don't even know.
We have
point A, and he's at point triple Z. We have no
idea.
And he's
I'm gonna throw my brother out because he's terrible, but I'm gonna make sure there's 10,000 years of darkness for the world. Okay, Unalaq, that makes sense. There's a lot of logic there. What? There's no explanation.
Yep. And then they give this awful character they make him an avatar too.
Really?
Yeah. That's where they're going.
Not only did we do the stupid thing that's been in every fan fiction ever.
Yeah.
That we never wanted.
We give it to the most pointless character ever.
It's I feel like it. I actually probably could have dealt with the anti-avatar better if it had been someone who actually had a character and a purpose.
Yeah, if it's Varric, then it's better. But, and it's also Unalaq's.
If it had been Amon who wanted to be the dark avatar.
Or even Ozai. I could have understood that because he's crazy. And But Unalaq was just okay.
Yeah.
He went from wanting to, be the uncle and, being manipulative. I think he was, the only interesting parts of, the first four episodes. If it wasn't for him, I honestly would have not have watched. I liked him at first, but then he went nowhere. So it was that was a waste. Episode 1 and 2, I was kind of interested. Who is this guy? Is he really
what's
evil?
His plan? What's he doing?
You know?
And then it was okay, you don't have a plan. You don't make any sense. Okay.
Amon also didn't have a plan, but he did claim to have a plan.
But Amon looked cool doing it.
Yeah, Amon is just very engaging the entire season. Unalaq was not. And I don't know, I think we've ranted about this a long time. But I just don't understand. Anyway, ending on a more cheery note to this podcast, while we were recording this, did top 10 quotes. So, Britt, give us the top 10 quotes.
I posted them in chat, so we're all going to read them off, but I'll start.
I don't see them. But okay. Oh, no, here they are. Is this just Korra? Yeah, this is just Korra.
Yes, it's just Korra. Number 10 is "I've been lied to about little men in boxes" by Washi Tonk.
I don't know if that would make my top 10. That's a pretty good one, though.
It cracked me up so much.
All right.
It's more of the wolf's reaction.
Yeah, it's because the fox.
And then,
and it's the best.
Number 9 was Tenzin the Heartbreaker by Korra, because the way she says it is beautiful. And someone else can read the other one.
I'm gonna find it. Give me a minute. Okay, what are we on? Eight.
Number 8.
No, wait. I think Sam should do this one. She reads it the best.
All right. Number 8 Get out of town. By Marco.
Like, I know I said it's, like, horrible, but, like, it's so funny.
She has to do number 7 as well.
Yes.
And number 7. No, no, no. The best way to win a boy's heart is to brew a love potion of rainbows and sunsets and make true lovers sprout wings and fly to a magical castle in the sky where they get married and eat clouds with spoons and use stars as ice cubes in the moonlight punch. Forever and ever and ever. By Evie.
Like, it's the best thing ever.
I hope we see more of her season 3. I really do. I think the air grandbabies are really well done. I think there's a lot to go on there if you want to do some cute kiddie show stuff. So.
But that would be higher for me, that one. That's a very strong one.
Mm-hmm.
And then continue. I guess I'll do 6. I make no promises. Like
I will make no such promises.
That's what I was going to correct
this
it.
From our memories.
Yes. That's a very strong line from Jenora. Jenora has a bunch of them, but that is a very good one. I don't know what that sound is. Yes, continue.
I will protect you, my little feeble turtle duck.
I guess I had to make the list, totes.
Yeah, that's a good one.
And then I really want to do number 4 because it's my favorite. I'll see you at the end of the world. Like, why?
That's not by Korra. That's why I do. Yeah.
That's by, like...
That should be
it's like a Bond, something a Bond villain says. Really? Why do you like Bond villains? Korra isn't a Bond villain, though that would be a really interesting spinoff.
Yes. Vatu is killing me, like he's the best.
3.
I am currently wetting my pants. By what's his face?
Shiro Shinobi.
I can't say his name.
I disagree with Shiro this one, Shinobi. But it's okay. He does, the better one is the Flamio's line, I think, right? He does the plug for,
No.
Yeah, that's better. Anyway.
No, it isn't.
That's better.
And then,
this is,
boil
this
should, it yourself.
That's number 1.
Boil it yourself.
That's number 1. I don't want to hear anything else.
Too bad. Number 1 is the best.
What the Flamio?
Like, oh my god. Lynn. Just because, it's only funny because Lynn said it. Like,
it's
Lynn said,
good.
What the Flamio?
Delaney is actually in love with Lynn.
So. You're also missing Go Away, Mako, says Bolin early in the season.
No, we can't have everything that's in the
collage. I also want it on the list. I guess it kind of like a... I can't remember the word. The honorable mention, there we go, of, oh, are you still a jerk? Like, that was just a great line by Korra early in the show.
Everything Asami says should be number 1. Also, we're missing Milo. You're pretty. Can I have some of your hair?
No.
Yes.
Forgot about that.
There's another Milo line, too, that's very strong.
No.
Yes.
No. Can you imagine if she actually gave him some of her hair? What would he do with it?
He did.
He just carried around with him.
I don't know.
Always.
What do little boys do?
Great question. Okay, so there's your quotes. Post in the forums your favorite Korra quotes. We've done, I think we did in the original one.
This was the worst podcast we've ever had.
This is not only one podcast, this is 2 podcasts.
This is the worst podcast. I'm not proud of this.
Which one?
This.
The one right now?
Yes.
Okay, that's great.
Both of them. This whole session I'm not proud of.
It was pretty rough because we had to stop and start a lot, but... I think it's pretty
interesting. The only thing I'm least proud of is that thing I did with the Hot Pockets. You know the thing.
I don't think list worked very well, Dylan.
No, I think this was fine.
No, it wasn't.
You can cut this part out.
For people to listen to.
You what?
Me?
I don't know what you... Never mind. Okay, so yeah, that's it. I guess let's wrap up the second one first. We're going to have to go and record a beginning to the second one and then an end to the first one. But this, we'll do this first. That's all for this week's podcast. The outline is somewhere. Anyway, yeah, credits.
Money.
You know, you guys are co-hosts. I'm hosting. I edit it and stuff. Music credits, which I actually should say. Yoshida Brothers, Jeremy Zuckerman, Luke Tripp. And second writers, AJ, Kevin, Jeff. And contributors, Garrett, Sierra, Nick, and Devin, and Lexi.
That's it. G-Money, Sierra Mist,
Nick and Knight.
Rudy and Tabuti.
Yeah. Great. If you enjoyed today's podcast, consider donating to From the Spirit World. All donations go directly to supporting our podcast. You can donate by going to dongfeng.net/podcast and clicking on donate at the top.
Spend all of 30 seconds thinking of a nickname for you.
Yes, it's very important.
Check out our bios on the podcast page and email us at dongfeng, Tumblr, Twitter.
I'll write you a bio.
dylan@domicrane.net. Send us voicemail. I think I'm putting this part up. This is part two of List of Core Things. I think I'm putting this up next week. So we're actually a week ahead right now.
Who wants to listen to that?
We still might record a podcast next week and just put it on the week after. But I don't know what it'll be on. I have no idea. So, and you all can't suggest for... I'll say suggest at the end of part one, which we'll record after this. So yeah, thanks for listening. Any other thoughts on our list, guys?
Why did we do that?
This was good.
I enjoy lists. This was fun.
This was the worst podcast we've done.
You're very pessimistic. What should we end on?
And this shows that collaborative lists work for the most part. We did pretty well. We did it in like 3 minutes, Dylan. This was pretty great, considering.
Mm-hmm.
It was, no, that was good. That was a strong list. What should we end on?
Mm-hmm.
Not that.
I always want to end on "See you at the end of the world." I have no idea.
Pick a quote from our quote list, mm-hmm. and then
spoil it yourself.
Yes, spoil it yourself.
Yes.
Anyway, thanks for listening, guys. We're still weekly after this. 1, 2, 3. I'll make no such promises.
Spoil it yourself.
See you at the end of the world.
That's the best.